Hello and welcome to Athletic Therapy Now, a podcast for athletic therapists by an athletic therapist. My name is Ashley Burr and I will be your host. Thank you for joining us today. All right, welcome to episode 7 of Athletic Therapy Now, collaboration and toxic professionalism. So Lindsay's joining us today. Lindsay Langalis is the creator of Athletic Therapy School. She provides online coaching and resources where she teaches clinical athletic therapists how to accomplish a full schedule, healthy paychecks, and clientele they love working with. She has been a certified athletic therapist for almost 11 years now and has owned and operated her multi-therapist clinic in Calgary for almost equally as long. Early in her career, she was heartbroken to watch many talented ATs struggle to build clientele, earn a living, and subsequently decide to leave the profession altogether. Athletic Therapy School was born out of that heartbreak and the desire to help individual ATs learn the business and skills they need to create a thriving career and stay in our profession long term. So Lindsay, thank you for joining us today. And, you know, like we talked about before starting the recording, I love that you have this Instagram page that creates this knowledge in this area for new grads to learn from. And so just to start out, can you share with us what your favorite thing about being an athletic therapist is?
I feel like that's an easy one, and I'm surprised that not everyone answers the exact same thing. But the transformations, it's just so uplifting, and I can't imagine doing anything else with my life. But, you know, having someone come in chronic pain, and it's been significantly, you know, debilitating in their life for a long period of time, and then you start to make progress and they feel better, and just watching them light up and the difference that it makes in their mental health and their life, really, definitely fills my soul.
That's great. Yeah, seeing that that progression throughout the whole scheme of things is really cool to see. Mm-hmm. So this podcast was kind of born out of a post that you had made on one of your stories. I only saw the last story. I didn't see the ones that led to it. But what I saw was a post that just kind of said, was taking a poll of what city athletic therapists found was most toxic. And then so I reached out to you and I asked you a couple of questions about it. I was really interested in hearing what came of it. So can you share with us what that originated from?
Yeah, it really just like kept going and kept gaining momentum and transforming. It started from this survey that was done on the Athletic Therapy Network or Job Network page. They had done a survey with students and shared the results of, you know, some feedback of what the students had to say about their programs and specifically in their parts about their practicum placement. And my interpretation of a lot of it was that the students felt like their practicum placements were, in to use my verbiage, toxic. You know, a lot of negative experiences in their practicum placements that they were sharing. So I shared that and shared sort of my two cents about it and asked some questions about, you know, as a group, did, you know, the people who follow my page, did they feel like their practicum placement was toxic or was negative? And I got a big response of a lot of people saying like, yes, or a lot of the time it was. Most people sort of at least somewhat agreed with that statement. And then from there, I just started getting messages from people saying, you know, thanks for shedding light on this. I had a really toxic situation here. And people were telling me, I think my city is the most toxic or it's really bad in this community. So that got me thinking, I wonder if there is communities that are sort of worse or better as far as how we treat each other in the AT community. So that's when I put up that last poll that you saw. The results, by far, most people said Ontario or Toronto, they felt were the most toxic. I'm not sure exactly how accurate that is because most of my followers are from Ontario. So it could be because of that. But yeah, it was really interesting to hear everyone's stories about the situations they've been in their individual provinces and communities and how they feel things are in that location.
That's really interesting because, I mean, like you said, there's a lot of your followers are from Ontario. And I think 50% of athletic therapists are Ontario. So it would make sense. Yeah. I mean, I think we all kind of feel like there's a little bit of toxicity within our communities. And I originally, when I saw that post, I thought it was more about just general interprofessional toxicity, not just within athletic therapy, but, you know, across mm-hmm. all of the different, you know, AT, PT, RMT, OT, like all of the different possibilities out there. So,
another interesting thing about the conversations I was having was how people interpreted that question. I had a lot of people that were saying, you know, it has to do with sort of more political topics or associations, or that's why they felt there was that toxicity in their certain region. And then there was other people that were saying like, no, you know, AT to AT, it's toxic where they live. So definitely different definitions and different like forms of that toxicity. But interesting to speculate on.
Yeah. So a good place to start, I think, is to ask you to define what you mean by the word toxic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good question. So I think sort of what I was intending is anything that's intentionally malicious towards someone else. That's how I was using the term. I can give you 1,000 different examples, but, you know, doing something to intentionally harm another athletic therapist, whether that be talking behind their back or intentionally harming their business or their ability to build clientele, whatever it might be. It comes in 1,000 different forms, but that sort of malicious attitude towards each other.
It just makes me think of Mean Girls.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Maybe we're a community of mean girls and boys.
So going into that a little bit further, you're talking about how, you know, I guess gossiping, right? Like gossiping about another profession or another therapist and hurting their business, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally. And this wasn't one of the questions that I threw in for you. So I'm going to just pull this out here. I wonder if it's like that scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. We're being malicious towards other people because we're worried that we are not going to get enough clients. We're going to lose our clients to other businesses or other companies. And I mean, this might be on my mind right now because I just came from a group of professionals in the city I live in Winnipeg, talking about, we got into that scarcity mindset and collaborating with other professions, even within our profession. And how, and we're going to get into this later, but you know, it's so important to, if you're good at this one thing, mm-hmm. you don't need all the clients. Not all the clients are going to like you. Not all the clients are going to jive with you, and that's okay. We're not going to be the same person for every single client. We're not going to work with every client, and it's okay to refer out. I refer out to other ATs all the time because they have, not specialties, because we don't really have specialties, but they have extra learning in specific areas that maybe I have an understanding of, but not enough that I feel like I can really help that client.
Which takes a huge amount of confidence to do that and to admit to someone else's strengths or your weakness or, you know, just a different niche that they have. I think that takes confidence, and maybe that's what's lacking in our community and why that scarcity is there. I think it's sort of like that saying of like, hurt people, which I find the most fascinating thing about this topic is like, why do we have a whole population of hurt ATs that are trying to hurt other ATs? Why are we so hurt? And how do we, you know, heal? And how do we stop passing that on to the next generation again and again? You know, 50 years from now, I don't want to have that same thing within our industry. So
yeah, absolutely. That's, I like that. Hurt people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think that athletic therapists can do if they feel that they're in a toxic space with other professionals, whether it's within their own clinic or in local clinics in the area?
Yeah, I think as much as possible, prioritizing yourself is important. It's easy to say, well, that person that I'm, you know, in a community with, they're toxic, so how can I help them change? Which I think is sort of fruitless. People aren't going to change unless they're ready to change and they do their own inner work to change, you know, whatever attitude or paradigms they have. The more we can just focus on ourselves and take care of ourselves, I think it'll be more successful. So looking at yourself in the mirror and, you know, am I displaying any of those behaviors myself? Am I making myself open to this toxic conversation? Am I receptive to it? Because if you're a equal participant in the conversation, people are going to come to you with those toxic topics again and again. So how do you, A, take care of yourself so that you're not a hurt person hurting other people, you know, heal yourself. And I think burnout plays a big part in that. So how do you look after yourself, nurture yourself, fill your own cup? But then B, how do you create this wall to protect yourself so that people don't feel comfortable coming to you with those toxic topics? And that might include a lot of different things. And I think that takes some self-reflection. Something that I've done myself is being ruthless with social media. And anytime I see something on social media that doesn't seem supportive of another person, doesn't uphold my own personal values, I ruthlessly unfollow those accounts or mute them or whatever it is. And I don't want to be influenced, you know, by those accounts at all. So I've unfriended people that just, you know, aren't aligned with myself. Unfollow, mute. I've removed followers on my own pages as well. If someone sort of constantly wants to bring up those toxic topics or wants to get in arguments with me, just remove them as a follower and try to shield myself and protect myself as best I can.
That's great. I did that a little bit as well, with the social media unfollowing or muting people that just don't fill my cup. And it's wild to do that. I have this, I mean, I'm also one of those people, on my cell phone, I still have contacts from high school in my cell phone because what if I need it? I don't need it. I haven't talked to those people in 20 years. I can probably start to delete some of that.
Is if I wouldn't wave and say hello in a grocery store, I probably shouldn't have them on my social media accounts.
If I'm going to
like duck behind an aisle to avoid them, red flag, I should probably not have them on my social media. But if I would like, you know, walk right by because I haven't seen them in 20 years and like not recognize them or not say hi to them, yeah, I don't think they need to be on my accounts. So that's like my yardstick that I use.
It's a really good rule of thumb there. I also find if I watch the same, they tend to post the same kinds of content, right? So if somebody's posting content that I just don't feel good about, it doesn't make me feel good, it doesn't make me feel happy, it brings negative feelings, then I will, the easy one for me is to just unfollow and leave it. Yeah. Sometimes I also like to keep some of those on my list because it will fuel certain posts that I will make. Mm-hmm. So I keep them so that I won't engage. But if somebody has this post that I just, you know, completely disagree with, instead of commenting and fueling that, I will create my own post with my own opinion on that topic.
But I think you're able to do that because you're coming at it from like a healthy point of view where it's not triggering you and you're able to stand back and go, I have a different perspective that I'm going to share versus someone who's like really in the thick of it and they're constantly comparing themselves to other ATs and, you know, negative self-talk and every little thing they see on social media like eats away at them. I think maybe that's not the time to be taking that and to use it as fuel for your own social media account. So sort of going back to what I was saying before, that like self-reflection piece to figure out where you are right now in your journey and do you need to like disengage and heal or are you feeling good and you can like, you know, watch that and have an alternate opinion and use it. And it's going to be different at different stages, I think.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you said that because it's a different level for every person. Mm-hmm. And maybe a new grad who is still trying to find their place in the world needs to just unfollow all those people. And then when they're ready, they can start looking at how they can address that if they want to. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with never addressing that in the way that I address it. We can just unfollow and do it as we want, right?
Yeah.
So you've talked about how we can protect ourselves with social media unfollowing and muting people, especially people that we're not going to say hi to at a grocery store. Looking at ourselves and where we're going with that. If we have toxic relationships in a closer environment, it's harder to navigate that. What would your recommendations for that be? And I'm talking, we're in the same clinic, right? If somebody's in the same clinic and it's not the best relationship and it's this butting heads over clients, what would your advice be?
Yeah, I think it depends on the relationship largely. If it's like your best friend at work, but your best work friend always wants to gossip about others, maybe you have a close enough conversation that you can be like, hey, this is really starting to get to me and it's affecting my mindset. Can we shift things and, you know, have more positive, constructive conversations? I don't want to talk about other ATs anymore. And maybe you can be a positive influence in their life if you have that close connection with that person. If you aren't close, how can you just sort of distance yourself, you know, not be sitting around in the staff room where you're available to have those types of conversations that you don't want to? You know, how can you, again, create that barrier, create a little bit of distance? And I don't think, I mean, part of this conversation is collaboration with other therapists, which I think is so positive and so valuable. But that doesn't mean that every single person is going to be the right fit for you to collaborate and network with. And maybe you just don't jive with that person and you don't see eye to eye. And how can you be cordial and professional, you know, without having to share clients or without having to talk about how was your weekend, you know? So how do you create that separation so that you can look after yourself first? That would be my priority in that situation.
That's really awesome. And I think it comes back to what you said earlier about figuring out what your values are. Have you read the book Strong Women Lift Each Other Up by Molly Galbraith?
I haven't read it, but I've heard of it.
Okay, because some of the same things you're saying sound very familiar to some of the things that she writes up in that book. And she talks about, this is the second podcast that I've mentioned this in now, but she talks about, you know, figuring out what your values are, because once you know what your core values are, it's so much easier to set those boundaries to be able to figure out what you want to do going forward. And, you know, the same kind of thing, like if somebody comes to you and they're gossiping about something and that's not part of your values, just saying, hey, you know, I'm not interested in talking about this anymore. I know maybe this was something we used to talk about, but I'm really trying to step away from this kind of discussion or this kind of talk. And then the more you say that other person is going to either just not use you as that outlet to gossip with, or they're going to start to realize that, hey, maybe I should follow suit because that seems like such a positive way to go about things.
It really is addictive. I've seen, you know, coworker relationships or friendship relationships where it grows and grows and grows, the toxicity that is, to a point where that's the only type of conversation those two people have. They will constantly be talking about whatever it is, you know, hating on the clinic owner or hating on this other AT. And it's like their entire relationship between the two of them is based on this mutual hate, which I wouldn't want any of my relationships to be built on hate. So it's one of those things that it can be brought up once in conversation, and then it, like I said, it grows and it really takes on a life of its own. So the faster you can like stomp it out, I think the better.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's great. So how, I guess we're going to put this into a two-part question. First, let's talk about what's the importance of professional collaboration within athletic therapy and within other professions that we can work with.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with what you were saying earlier, is that we can't possibly, every single one of us, have the exact same skill set, the same strengths, the same niche, have taken the same continuing ed courses. We will have different strengths, and there's a place for all of us. And different clients will, you know, need our expertise or need someone else's expertise. So we're really not competing against each other, more so is trying to find the exact person that we can help, that align with us. And if they don't align with us, I think we should do our best to help them find the person that is aligned with them. I collaborate with other healthcare professionals as well as other ATs if they have different continuing ed, different skills that I don't have, even different personality types. One of the ATs in my clinic is like made of patience, like she has it in spades. And I'm very driven, very quick. So if I have a client that's sort of testing my patience and draining my patience, I know that they will do much better with her than with me. So if I'm feeling not aligned with the client in that way, I'm very likely to send them on to see her, and she will give them all of the, you know, attention and patience and move slowly and do everything that they need. Whereas I'm like, okay, what's next? So if we're not aligned, I'm happy to share clients around, and I think that builds a lot of trust with those colleagues, and they will reciprocate that. So it really is just mutually beneficial because they're building their clientele with people that they love to work with, that's suited for them. And in exchange, they'll send you people that you love to work with, that you're suited for.
Yeah, and trust along our clients as well. I find mm-hmm. that with the clients that I refer out to other professionals, whether it's another athletic therapist, physio, RMT, chiro, any of the healthcare professionals, they always come back, almost always come back. And quite often I've had clients that will see me as an athletic therapist and they'll see another athletic therapist for separate concerns or even the same concerns because we work on the same concerns differently. Mm-hmm. And they like having both of those options available because they can't necessarily get that within one person. Yeah. And they just, a lot of my clients will say, you know, I trust what you say because you've always referred me out mm-hmm. when you feel like it's beyond what you can help me with. And so I'm always coming to you because I know that you will send me to the right practitioner if, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to lead the way and tell me where to go. Yeah. And so great. Super.
And confidence, like. You're showing how confident you are in your ability by not being threatened by someone else's expertise, which speaks volumes about you.
Yeah. And to come back to sending to other practitioners and that trust between other practitioners, I now like to ask practitioners, what's their favorite, you know, clientele that they like to see? What fills your cup? Mm-hmm. What's your goal? And as a new grad, that was a really hard thing for me to answer because I didn't know what I wanted to do or where I wanted to be. And I did want to collect all those clients. And it is important to quotation marks, collect those clients to find what you love and learn a little bit about everything. But once you get further on and you find that niche that you want to be in, then having that as this is my main group of clients, or these two things are my main group of clients that I want to work with. Yeah. And so then when somebody asks you, then they know, okay, if I have, for example, myself, I work with a lot of pregnancy postnatal women. So I'll get referrals specifically for that.
Yeah.
Because that's a niche that I'm really happy in and confident in. And that practitioner, as much as they might know a little bit about it, if the client mm-hmm. is a little bit more complex, then they're going to refer them on, and then vice versa. So I'm going off on a rant here and
I hold feel myself like back. A podcast of its own, like developing a niche.
Yeah. It's I think we have to figure out where we are and what we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And going back to something you said earlier about, you know, like co-treating or collaborating where the client seeing you and another practitioner for either different reasons or simultaneously at, you know, alternating intervals. When I've done that, I've had nothing but success with the client getting better faster. And sometimes I even like to collaborate and work with a practitioner that has the opposite mindset to what I have. Because I find if we approach the problem from separate points of view, we're not going to miss a thing. You know, for example, working together with a chiropractor, I tend to look at fascia and muscle first and joint secondary, and they tend to look at things reverse. They look at joint first. You better believe that we are addressing every single factor that's contributing to that person's pain because we are, you know, approaching it differently and overlapping too. So I think if you want the absolute best for your client, being humble enough to figure out what would help them, to supplement what you're doing, whether that be someone that has a different skill set, an exact opposite skill set of what you have, or complementary too. Because sometimes if I'm all booked up for a couple weeks and someone is suffering in pain, I don't want them suffering in pain for 3 weeks waiting to see me. So can they see my coworker that I really trust, who's extremely knowledgeable in the meantime, so that they're not suffering? So I think there's a ton of reasons why to work together with others. And the more you do, the more, yeah, it just helps everyone involved, client and both practitioners.
In continuing with that collaboration, what's the first step that somebody can do if they want to create a collaborative relationship with another AT or another healthcare practitioner?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I teach in my AT school content, as well as in my clinic, to send practitioner letters. That's what we call them. So maybe it's your client comes in and they already see a massage therapist and you've never heard of or met that massage therapist, chiropractor or physio, whatever it is. Can you send a letter to that practitioner saying, I'd like to have a conversation where we can discuss, how we're helping this individual and how we can help them to the best of our ability. I have found X, Y, and Z with this client and we're working on ABC. We've seen this much success. So just being open, obviously with the client's consent, to send this letter. And then hopefully you get a reply to that email or letter that you send. From there, quite often I'll go for a coffee with that practitioner and have a really amazing conversation where we're learning about how the other person treats, sort of less relevant to that specific client and more general, getting to know them. And then I like to do a treatment exchange afterwards. So I'll treat them for free and they'll treat me for free so we can really see each other's hands-on approach. Normally by then we have so much mutual respect for each other that we're happy to start referring. And those first few clients, we really learn how to work together with each other. And I've had these relationships with other therapists for years, 7, 8, 9 years. And after so many years, I know exactly what that practitioner is going to do for this client. For example, I have a massage therapist that specializes in visceral work that I work really closely with. I would say 50% of my clients also see her. Either they came from her to me or vice versa. And I know exactly, what she's going to work on and how much she's going to be able to help that person. So there's so much trust and so much respect there that it's just sort of like a no-brainer to rely on her when my expertise in the visceral realm, comes to an end.
Absolutely. That's great. I do something very similar. I'm not as detailed as you are with it. I think the way that you go about it can create a much more meaningful relationship between practitioners. Mm-hmm. Mine is a little bit less, where I will have the client actually email both of us at the same time as a mm-hmm. collaborative effort. That one is more for just creating a open narrative between the two practitioners for client care. But I have definitely, with practitioner names that pop up on a regular basis between clients, I will go the route that you go, where it's mm-hmm. I send them a letter, I shoot them a message, hey, do you want to grab coffee, let's chat, do a treatment exchange. And that's so valuable. Even if you don't get a single referral, it is so mm-hmm. valuable to learn what else is out there.
Yeah.
And to be able, if a client asks about it, to be able to give them that information.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes therapists can get a little discouraged if they send that letter and then they don't hear back. But just because you didn't hear back doesn't mean that they didn't receive it and they didn't read it. We have doctors that we work closely with where we've never received a letter back from this doctor, but we just keep updating them about their patient's progress and how well they're doing and what we're working on. And guess what? They send us another referral and another referral. So we know that they're getting our letters and that they're happy with the work that we're doing, but we just never get any reciprocal communication because they're doctors and they're busy. But we just keep this open line of communication, even if it's one directional. And like I said, they just keep sending us referrals and they obviously trust and appreciate what we're doing. So if you don't hear back, don't take that as a discouraging thing that, it was all a waste of time or anything. It wasn't. You're still building that relationship, even if you don't hear back.
Absolutely. I have, there's a massage therapist in Winnipeg, a couple massage therapists in Winnipeg, where we just have this, I've never spoken to them, never talked with them. I talk with them through clients. And there mm-hmm. is this referral network we have going back and forth, where we're both just referring back and forth, but we have never even met, never spoken a word to each other. And it's just this really interesting, cool mutual respect that has built over the 10 years of, that I've been practicing. So yeah, it's cool. So I'm going to go through a quick recap where we've kind of hit our time here, and such great information. I feel like we could go on, like you said earlier, we could go on forever on this topic. So to recap, when we're talking about toxicity or what it means to be toxic, we're talking about when professionals are being intentionally malicious, almost gossip girly mm-hmm. type of situation. And you said the quote, hurt people hurt people. So how can we get out of this going forward in our profession? How can we make it so we're not feeling hurt to get away from that hurting other people. And I think that's a whole other conversation. And that's, and we talked a little bit about the scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. And then we got on to, what can we do if we are feeling like we're in a toxic space? And the biggest kind of takeaway is instead of focusing on the other person, focus on ourselves. What can we do for ourselves? What are our behaviors? And are we doing anything to add to this toxic relationship? And how can we pull out of that? And what can we do differently? We can protect ourselves by if it's a social media thing, removing those people from our social media, muting them. If we're not going to say hi to them, if we're going to hide, in that marketplace, if we're going to hide behind an aisle, well, maybe they shouldn't be on our social media and vice versa. And I talked about that book, Strong Women Lifting Each Other Up, which was referring to what you had said earlier about finding our values, figuring out our values, and getting into that scarcity mindset. And there's enough bodies for everybody. There's enough people for everybody. And we're going to speak to the people that jive with us. And if they don't jive with us, that's okay. We can still help them find somebody that's going to work better for them and help them get better. We all have the same end goal. And I think that we need to remember that. We all have the same end goal, and it's to help people get better. Nobody gets into this job because we want to make people worse. Right. Yeah. And it's and looking at when we're collaborating, looking at what everybody's different strengths are. If you have three ATs in the same clinic, there is no way that all three ATs are going to treat the same way, have the same continuing education courses, have the same mindset or ability to work with clients. And so figuring out everybody's strengths and then figuring out which clients align with which person, which is going to help to create that trust among professionals, and it's going to help to create trust among your clients. They're going to really appreciate that you have that confidence to refer them on, and they're more likely to continue to come back to see you when they're finished with that other professional, or see you at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then when we talked about how, what's the one thing that somebody can start doing after today to help to work on that collaboration, looking at making that practitioner letter, following through with going out for coffee, doing a treatment exchange, or maybe you don't hear back and that's okay too. You might, the more that people see your name, the more they hear your name, they're going to still refer to you even if they don't get back to you. Mm-hmm. And another thing that people can do is they can take your course. You have a course, right? Yeah.
So it's sort of, it's transforming right now. So right now it's been online coaching where I meet with my group monthly and teach them about how to build clientele. It's been amazing. I've got two groups, sort of one started in September, one started in January, and both are still running. But I've received a ton of requests to take my content and turn it into a self-paced online course, which I think is awesome. So I just need to do the work to actually turn it into a course for everyone. So I'm working on that. I'm hoping that it'll launch in the fall. But we talk about all of this, everything from mindset and paradigms to what you can do to network and build clientele, what words to say to gain clientele, everything that you don't learn in regular AT school, I teach you in my AT school. So
that's really awesome. So how can people find you if they want to learn more about you, learn more about your AT school? Where can they find you? Yeah.
I'm most active on Instagram. Technically, I have a Facebook page, but I'm not over there very much. So on Instagram, it's just Athletic Therapy School is the handle. So you can follow there and then send me DMs. I'm constantly having numerous conversations with ATs, which is what I love about that page. Giving them guidance and helping them, asking questions, learning more about their experience in their unique community or their unique niche. If anyone has any questions for me or wants some guidance or wants to learn more about AT school, just DM me on the Instagram page.
Perfect. That's great. And I will link all of those in the show notes.
Okay.
Well, thank you for joining us today. And I really appreciate this conversation on toxic relationships and collaboration. And it sounds like there's a lot that we can learn and a lot that we can do to pull ourselves out of that and to work on collaborating with other professionals.
Agreed. Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome.